A5, number 11A.
We stopped at page 232, where we said, in order to understand that reference on the power of divine principle, we must read the whole paragraph before in order to get the real subject and the setting of the subject. So when we read at line 9, we see that she says, Scripture informs us that with God all things are possible. All good is possible to spirit. But our prevalent theories, now you can see that she is trying to show something about the theories of the scripture compared with theories, practically deny this. So, can you see the stage? She says, here are scriptural authority, and on the other side are prevalent theories as authorities. And make healing possible only through matter. These theories must be untrue, for the scripture is true. Can you see? She compares constantly scripture and theories, human theories. Now we know that human theories is the counterfeit of principle. So what is under consideration is actually theories against scriptural authority. And that sets at once the tone that she is talking about the synonymous term principle. Christianity is not false, but religions which contradict its principle are false. Can you see again? It's still in the tone of principle. Actually, you see now, I have chosen this reference to show you that we have to read the textbook not literally, that you know, but even not spiritually in a way that you take sentence by sentence. We have to read the textbook as subjects being presented. And subjects are perhaps being presented over 2 pages, over 3 pages. Sometimes only 1 paragraph or 2 paragraph. We have to get into use to hear the subject that is under discussion. And then we see the use of the synonymous term. Here under discussion is the subject. On one side, theories, human theories, a false sense of religion, and on the other side, scriptural authority or the principle of being. That is the subject. The subject is not power. See, subject is not power. Power is a secondary subject that enters in when we see here, then in our age. In our age, Christianity is again demonstrating the power of divine principle. From the preceding paragraph, you could see it was stressing the subject of principle versus theories. And now she says, well, this principle has divine power. And now we can understand why she doesn't say, in our age, Christianity is again demonstrating the power of truth, for instance, which we might have thought, as it did over 1900 years ago, by healing the sick and triumphing over death. Because the whole subject is, has scripture authority power, or have our human theories power or not? And in this way, you begin to hear that you have to read the textbook according to subjects, to themes presented, and not sentence by sentence. The sentences are out of context, so to say, if one does not see its inner connection. Actually, when you know the layout or the structure of this chapter here, Footsteps of Truth, you would see that this paragraph here, which we have read, that these paragraphs are under the tone of love as principle. So you feel that the subject treated here is principle from the point of view of Christianity, which is love, and compared with false religion and false theories. So power just enters in as a side subject, not as a main subject. Our main subject is not what has power. Our main subject is Christianity a governing principle and a ruling principle and a principle that works, or are human theories that which should be considered or not? Yes. Let's take another set of references that are showing another rule. For instance, let us take 224, and we read, 28, though the passage is much further down. Truth brings the element of liberty. On its banner is the soul-inspired motto, slavery is abolished. The power of God, now here it's the power of God, that is always a very general term when you can use God, brings deliverance to the captive. No power can withstand divine love. Why love? Why doesn't he say no power can withstand mind? Or no power can withstand truth? Big one? Deliverance, yes?
Yeah. Would deliverance be soul?
Deliverance would not be soul, but it could be also truth. And why do you feel she used here love? Liberation?
I thought liberation was soul, freedom of soul.
Yes, truth is liberating, yes, she and soul. You see, in 28 you have truth brings the elements of liberty. So you would think it is the power of truth, or the power of soul. But why on earth does she say love? Well, she doesn't say anything about Christianity. We have to be very careful not to interpret. Before, yes, more practical Christianity was before, yes. Yeah. What means the synonymous term love? Well, everything that has to be with the question of being bound is either through soul or through truth handled. Well, didn't we have the truth saves? I do. You know, I try now to be the critics, to corner you, and bring up everything that could be said against it. But you know, what is love? What is the tone of love?
Love enforces it,
yes. Fulfillment, yeah. You know, you have here a typical sense of love, namely that sense which says love is either all or nothing. When you have the complete, beg your pardon?
I said if you read on further.
Read on further. What is this? Yes? You see, the whole paragraph is about enslaving and making free, which you said has to do with truth or with soul. And actually, in the whole structure of this chapter, we are here in the tone of truth as soul. You felt it, huh? Yes? Yes, that's in the whole structure here is truth as the own. You felt that. So apparently the introduction of love is very minimal, or is a very is a side remark. Hmm? And that side remark is given very definitely by no power. No. Meaning love is everything. Huh? Love is either all or nothing. Huh? There is. You see, love gives you that sense. It's all or nothing. Huh? There is just no other possibility left. Huh? Love is so exclusive that it has just no other possibility. So that no power, huh, gives you a sense there is just no other means of possibility or excuse or anything. No power can withstand divine love. Meaning that love is so all-embracing. Love is all-embracing. Love is so all-encircling, all-fulfilling, that it just leaves no room for anything else. That's love. See, we are always sidetracked by that term love because we always think of love as with a small L, and then in the human. Love with a capital L is so much different, something so much different, you know? So it says, love is that which says, this is the only thing that is ever going on. There is no possibility for anything except the fulfillment and perfection of love. Love is all or nothing.
Max, don't all the other synonymous terms say basically the same thing? I mean, doesn't truth say there is no possibility of error because there is only truth, so error has no power? I mean, I still can't see why she just uses love.
Yes.
Because every other synonymous term says basically the same thing.
Yes.
There is no other power.
Yeah. You see, that's just the point. That's why I said I show you now another category of rules. Up to now, we always had, when power was used with another synonymous term than mind, we had a counterfeit. We had a counterfeit. And that is a rule that you can use perhaps in 90% of the references. Now here comes another rule. That's why I've taken it. Here comes another rule that one can also stress positively, without the negative, positively something, namely here, love. Love, see, you said quite rightly, why in truth we also could say that the power of truth shows that error has no power. That error has no power. Then you say error, the counterfeit. But here you have no counterfeit. This is a positive statement. Can you see? This is another rule we had to find out. Can you see why we were foxed so long? At one time one felt, well, Mrs. Eddy's language is quite exact, but not absolutely exact. It's exact up to 80% or 90%. Until one found out these other rules, like this one, that you can have a stressing of something positive, like here, love, that is absolutely exclusive. So there is no power. Huh? No power can withstand divine love. No. So these are rather seldom, these combinations. Let me take another one. 411, line 10. 411, line 10. This is that terrific big statement which one really should heed, because before this statement you have the method of argumentation, and here she gives to the method of arguing in healing and in treatment the last kick and says, actually you wouldn't need argumentation if you would understand the science of this book. Therefore, here she says, if spirit or the power of divine love bear witness to the truth, this is the ultimatum, a scientific way, and the healing is instantaneous. Can you see? Here you have, again, not immediately an opposite, a counterfeit. He says, if spirit or the power of divine love bear witness to the truth, it's positive. When we had before the power of love, it was again sin, a counterfeit. Here you have no counterfeit. Bear witness to the truth. And still up to this point, you wouldn't quite know why she uses love. Up to this point, if she would make here a full stop, you would think something is not quite right. But the answer comes, this is the ultimatum. You know? Because when we know the synonymous term love, we know that love is the ultimatum. The ultimate. And it's the ultimatum. There's just no query about it. Love is always that exclusiveness, either all or nothing, huh? And therefore the healing is instantaneous, instantaneousness. So here is another one, see, that belongs to that second kind of rule, which shows that we can, that Mrs. Eddy would bring out, say, something about love. For instance, in this reference, she wants to bring out that love is the scientific way, the ultimatum, that love is instantaneous healing, that in love there is actually no healing process, because love is always at the point of being fulfilled. So she builds up the tone of love, that love here in the practice, that love does not know any evil, does not really know a healing process, that it is always at the point of fulfillment, and couples it with power. Power of love. So these are the more difficult ones in your study, but you will see they are rather rare. I would say they make up perhaps only 3% of all the references that are questionable. All the others you can usually answer by that first rule of fact and counterfeit very easily. But there are others, and I wanted to show them to you. You can build up a subject like love here, love as the ultimatum, as the instantaneous healing, and couple it with power. She could also have coupled it with law. The law of divine love is the scientific way. Just as well, she could have done that. Because her subject here is love. Huh? And in the structure of this chapter, this is where Mrs. Eddy begins to speak about love as the main overall tone. All right.
Yes?
Yes?
In making the citation, this is mind and love. Mind is power.
Yes.
Of love. And it just brought to my thought the days of creation order on the level of Christian Science.
Yes.
Where mind and love show the purpose of that sequence.
Yes.
And with the goal of causality, they build in.
Yes.
And it just seemed, so this illustrates that in operation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that incorporating too much? Is it, I mean, do you as you're considering the combinations here, I mean, I didn't search this out, but it just came here. Do those points carry through? Always. If you have a mind-love combination, in one place, does it carry through always?
No. No.
Be different?
It changes in every chapter. Yes. Well, if we have time, I would like to show that perhaps on the last day or so. I would like to show that, say, a combination like mind and love changes from chapter to chapter in its tonality, because it's coined by the chapter itself, by the place value of the chapter within the matrix itself. It's coined. That's why, say, mind, even mind, the subject of mind in the first chapter is completely different, has a completely different tone than mind in the second chapter, or mind in the third chapter. It changes its tonality, and therefore also its subtones and its combination. Therefore, in a way, you will see that Mrs. Eddy never repeats it herself in the text tonality-wise. That's quite unexpected, because if we read the critics on the textbook by theologians and so on, they always bring out the same thing that they say. Mrs. Eddy goes always round and round with the same terminology and with the same words, always in circles, and meditates in circles, brings up always the same stuff again, always it's mind, mortal mind, the cause of disease, and so on. And if one does not see the structural sense of the textbook, you could say, yes, it is so. Always comes up again that truth heals sickness, sin, and death, and things like that. But the moment one begins to see the finer application, one begins to see that Mrs. Eddy never repeats the tonality of her subject in the textbook. Never. And perhaps next week when we go through the textbook, we may see that clearer. When we take, say, the subjects of mind to spirit, in every chapter we see that they never repeat themselves.
So you really could trip yourself up if you were holding on to some point like that.
Yes. I think you bring up a very important point, namely this one, that one has tried within the Dolly group way back in the 40s and 50s, when we didn't know much more than what we knew at that time. Because you also must understand, at that time we were at the beginning and we didn't know, and we had to find out afterwards, so trial and error and I don't know what, that some of the things we did were completely wrong. Namely, what we did very often was this very thing, that if we had some combination like spirit as mind, or spirit as spirit, or spirit as soul, say in the days of creation, then we would try to see that this is the tone that also appears somewhere else in the Bible or in the textbook, and say, well, because in the chapter on Genesis, mind as mind has this stone, and mind as spirit has this stone, this must appear all over the place. And this was the very opposite. It should no more appear all over the place. It should have a unique value, or else the infinite would repeat itself. So we always, at that time, tried to see that what we have learned up to that point would fit into everything we were studying. And we had that terrific, awful expression, it fits perfectly. That was our expression, it fits perfectly. We would take the days of creation and then read it somewhere else and say, it fits perfectly, it's the same story. That was the very opposite. It should not fit if it's good. Or it is repeating itself, and if it repeats itself, it's no more infinite. It cannot be structured. So I was very hot at that, actually, at that time. I just felt, no, it should not fit. But I couldn't stand up against the criticism. I always felt it must not fit. If the days of creation show the seven, then those seven should not fit with the commandments. It should not fit with the Beatitude. It should not fit with the chapter on prayer, because they have a different office, they have a different place values, and therefore they must show the seven in a different tonality. But that goes too far. I want to show you that perhaps on Friday or Saturday, that the tonality is given and is defined not through the synonymous term, but through the matrix, through the 4x4. That gives the differentiation of the synonymous terms. Stop at this point. It is too far. Huh? Yes. All right. Could I show you with the term power how Mrs. Eddy uses her language exactly? Do you feel you got it? Yes? Shall we make another exercise, a quicker one? Yes? Would you like one more? All right. Then we do it with law, which is so important. And now I think we can do it much quicker. 417, and we read on line 10. Maintain the facts of Christian Science that spirit is God and therefore cannot be sick, that what is termed matter cannot be sick, that all causation is mind acting through spiritual law. If we would ask now, what is mind here on line 13, we would say mind is causation, wouldn't we? Because here it says all causation is mind, so mind is all causation. We would further say that all causation of mind is acting, so we would have action. And perhaps we would say acting, how? Through law. That mind acts according to law. So we would feel that law is an idea of mind. Can we do it like this, that I go on, but I trust that if you are not following, that you interfere. Huh? Will you promise me that you stop me? Okay, so let's take another one, 207, and read line 10. Evil is not supreme, good is not helpless, nor are the so-called laws of matter primary, and the law of spirit secondary. Why law of spirit? With matter. You see, the law of matter. That's under consideration. The problem here is, has matter law? Is there a law of matter? And in order to counteract it, you need the law of spirit. So though law is fundamentally mind, the action of mind, the causation of mind, as we have seen, the moment we have to deal with the problem of matter having law, you have to deal with the law of spirit. So law of spirit is a combination defined through matter.